Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with our special guest, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer, Dustin Schutte. Dustin, it's been a little while. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. It has been a while, but it's always fun to talk Big Ten football with you.
It is, but of course, full disclosure, before we get on the air, we got to, you know, prep what we're going to talk about, and we talk baseball.
Obviously, it's that time of year. We're getting, it's the playoff race now, and you know, neither one of our teams are playing particularly well right now. So now it's just like we're providing a sounding board for each other.
Well, it's extra fun when Dustin and I talk baseball because, as our listeners all know, I am a Mets fan. Dustin is an Atlanta Braves fan, so of course they are competing for a playoff spot against each other. So I figured I'd get you now early enough, and if I wait a couple weeks, you and I might be at each other's throats then.
Yeah, you'll send out a request for me to join the show, and I'll just ignore the text.
Well, yeah, that will probably happen. So I'm glad I do have you today, Dustin. Let's talk some Big Ten football. And let's start at the very top. The AP poll came out. We had very interesting. Georgia was number one. But guess what? Two Big Ten teams, number two and number three. No surprise to anyone. Ohio State and Oregon, they're at the top of the Big Ten. Any surprise with that? Any disagreement with that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you could probably rotate those top three teams however you'd like, and you're not really going to get much argument from anybody. I think that what kind of set the precedent for Ohio State and expected to be in that number one spot, maybe ahead of Georgia, was the fact that you had some of the legends of Ohio State football, Urban Meyer and Jim Tressel, putting extra pressure on the Buckeyes this season, saying it's, you know, one of the most talented rosters that they've ever seen. And those are two coaches that have won national championships. So I thought that Ohio State would be number one, but I don't really have a problem with Georgia being in that top spot. Again, it's the preseason poll. Oregon, I don't want to say that they're a wild card, but you know, how do they adjust with Dylan Gabriel moving on from Bo Nix? They were so effective through the air. They were so dynamic offensively a season ago. But I think that those are the two best teams in the Big Ten entering this season. I will say that a little bit further down the poll, and hopefully I'm not stepping on your toes here, Jim, but I'm still surprised to see Michigan. I think Penn State's a top 10 team. I'm still surprised to see Michigan, with all they lost from last year, not only ranked, but in the top 10. That's to me, that was maybe a bigger surprise.
Well, actually, it's funny you bring that up. Landon Tengwall, who I do a show with, who's the former Penn State player, we had that exact same discussion. We talked quite a bit about this AP Top 25, and Landon pointed out how Michigan people were disappointed that they were only ranked, ninth?
I think they're number nine, yeah.
Yeah, and that it's, hey, we're the defending national champs. How could you drop us down that far? Well, I suggest you take a look at where Washington is, who was the national runner-up yeah, a year ago. And I think what's in common for both Michigan and Washington is a complete changeover with the coaching staff. You know, a star quarterback moves on. These are new teams. And Michigan, I don't want to put them down as overrated, but I can see that things fall apart at Michigan.
I will put them in the category right now at overrated. And I think it's because it's nobody's fault, but it's, as you mentioned, they lost almost an entire coaching staff. They lost, I think 18 was the final tally, 18 starters from last year's national championship team. I know they still have some good players on that roster, particularly on the defensive end. Sharon Moore is going to be a first-year head coach. They have some issues with the NCAA right now, you know, with the Connor Stallions and sign-stealing allegation thing. But when you lose that much talent, I don't know it. And you're ushering in a brand new staff. It would be one thing if Jim Harbaugh and was still in town, they retained all of their staff, then you kind of have a little bit of trust, but they are starting brand new. I don't know that they're going to be like a bad football team, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere close to a top 10 team. I think they would be lucky to be ranked at the end of the season, if you want my honest opinion about it.
Well, let's take a look at their schedule. Right off the top, they play Texas out of conference. Give them a lot of credit for taking on that game, but they play Texas, very highly ranked, obviously. They're ranked fourth. They have Texas, they have Oregon, they have Ohio State on their schedule. I don't know if you have the schedule in front of you, but even if they lose all three of those games, they won't be top 10, but I think they would be definitely ranked. Do you see another loss for Michigan beyond those big three?
I think you look at USC, and I think there's a lot of question marks about USC's defense. I think we all expect the offense is going to be just fine, but how does their defense adjust? I think if they make the improvements, you know, Lane Kiffin, going way back in the time machine there, Lincoln Riley made some adjustments to his coaching staff and got in a new defensive coordinator. So I think we're intrigued to see how that plays out. That could potentially be a loss. That's in the fourth week of the season. And let me tell you one thing. I think that Fresno State is a real threat to beat Michigan in week one. And that's you can label me a hater all you want, but this is a Fresno State team that went on the road and beat Purdue last season. They gave Minnesota two really good games a few years ago. This is like, I don't want to put them in the same category as like when Boise State was running the league and TCU was a really good Group of Five team, but this is a solid program week in and week out. And I think with the amount of change on this, it's going to be a lot of people's first game, a lot of players' first game, some coaches getting their feet wet for the first time. There's all the controversy that they faced throughout the offseason. I'm not going to guarantee, obviously, that Fresno State's going to win because Michigan's still a good football team. They still have premier talent, but I wouldn't be surprised if that game's in the fourth quarter and there's a lot of sweat pouring out of the fans sitting inside that stadium on that Saturday afternoon.
You know, you said we could call you a hater. I'm going to call you a hater. And I love it, Dustin. I love it. You can hate on Michigan all you want on this show, okay? You got free bill to – you can hate on them all that you want. Let's get back to Ohio State and Oregon, though, as the top dogs. I think if either one of them have a question mark, and this shows you how far I'm going, though, to try to find a question mark, is it at quarterback? Because both of them are bringing a transfer in. Now, I think Dylan Gabriel, he's a proven entity, and I think Oregon has proven what they can do with a transfer quarterback. We saw it with Bo Nix. Ohio State is bringing in Will Howard. Nothing wrong with Will Howard, but Ohio State is so good everywhere else. If I'm trying to find an issue, it's at quarterback. Does either one of those positions, quarterback position, concern you with those two teams?
Well, I don't think so. I think that what's going to be interesting is Ryan Day, over his time, has kind of moved away. You remember the Urban Meyer era where it seemed like he usually had a quarterback that was at least mobile, like a guy who could scramble, pick up yards. That was something JT Barrett was so good at. He could create. I know they kind of got away from that with Cardale Jones a little bit, but under Ryan Day, they really haven't had. Justin Fields could obviously run, but CJ Stroud, Dwayne Haskins, Kyle McCord, those guys were more pocket passers, and that's the type of offense Ryan Day wanted to run. And benefit of having a guy like Will Howard is he can run. And it seems like hiring Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator, you want to incorporate that into your offense so you're a little bit more dynamic. So that'll be an interesting kind of adjustment. How much does the offense change with Chip Kelly running the show? But I think the bigger concern, at least from the Ohio State perspective, is going to be the offensive line. And this isn't like an offensive line that we're questioning whether or not it's going to be the difference between 4-8 and 8-4. This is going to be the difference between 10-2 and 12-0. and, you know, getting back to that Big Ten championship game. But in the past, the reason they've had struggles with Michigan is they just get beat in the trenches. Even last season, they had problems against some of those other Notre Dame's defensive line. At times last year when they played Purdue's defensive line, gave them some fits. Like, this is a defensive line that even though Ohio State still had a really good rushing offense, it didn't quite feel the same. It didn't feel like in a big game against Michigan, if they needed, you know, third and three, they didn't have an offensive line where you could hand the ball off to Travion Henderson and he would be able to get you 4 yards, right? So I think that that, to me, is the bigger concern heading into this season. I know they're more experienced. I know they're deeper. They've kind of addressed those issues up front. But that, to me, when it comes to Ohio State, is the biggest question mark.
You know, I agree with you. Ohio State and Oregon, like I said, I am really pressing to find issues. So I think we both believe they'll be the two top teams probably playing the conference championship game. But if there's a team who might crash that party, who might it be?
You mean you play to your audience here?
Yeah, go ahead. I think you already did with your hate on Michigan.
That's right. I do think Penn State, now I will say I'm going to put an asterisk beside this. I think Penn State, talent-wise, here's my concern, Jim, is James Franklin has changed offensive coordinators quite a bit. And I think part of the problem is he still has his hands too much on the offense. And Drew Aller kind of hinted that, you know what, we're still using the same terminology as last year, but we are incorporating more of Andy Kotelnicki's style and his scheme. I'm a little concerned that Penn State's offense is still going to be relatively vanilla this year. I think if Andy Kotelnicki can be himself and James Franklin gives him a little bit longer leash, Penn State's going to be a real threat from a talent perspective. If not, is this a team that loses to Ohio State again? Is this a team that you know, loses some of those bigger games? I could see them being 10-2 and maybe missing out on a trip to Indy by a game. So, and then, you know, you got some teams that Iowa, Rutgers, you look at the schedule, I don't know that they're going to get to Indianapolis, but from a scheduling perspective, they got the good end of the deal from the Big Ten on that.
They did, and we're going to hit on the schedule a little bit later on the show, how big a variable that is, Dustin. But I'm going to ask you a question when we come back about the – well, first of all, I'll comment about your Penn State comment. Then I'm going to ask you, how would a tiebreaker work for that conference championship game? We'll do that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante along with my special guest, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we started at the top of the heap in the Big Ten. I think we're both in agreement. When you talk about the top of the heap, it's Ohio State, it's Oregon. I asked you who might crash that party. And you, being a good journalist, you played to your audience and you mentioned Penn State. What's interesting is you mentioned you're concerned about, you know, James Franklin's hand being too much in the offense. And that's been a criticism that we've heard a lot over the years. And I think James, he can't help himself. He adds to it when he's not only does he need to be asked about it, but he'll bring it up himself. Well, you know, this new offense, it's really not a new offense. We're keeping a lot of things. James, don't do that. You know, the fans, the journalists look at it and say the issue was on offense. You brought a new guy in to fix it. Even though, let's face it, a lot of offenses throughout college football have so many similarities. The foundation is similar everywhere. So maybe you say, hey, what, Andy Kotelnicki will have to learn our terminology versus everybody having to learn his. But don't say it that way, because you invite criticism from people like you and me, Dustin.
Exactly. Because then you just start to think, well, is it really going to be a different offense, or is it just going to be a different guy calling out the same offense, right? And so I think that's the biggest concern. I think also you're right in the fact that a lot of offense, it can be foundational and it looks similar. And I think that Penn State doesn't have to be too creative, but remember they were so successful in 2016 and 17 under Joe Moorhead. They had Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley and a plethora of talented receivers, right? And so I don't know. I don't know that they have to get super creative or change things too much, but if you don't have that caliber of talent, and I'm not saying they don't, but it's hard to replicate that type of production. I think you just have to throw in some wrinkles. And so I'm interested to see what those wrinkles look like, because I do think from a talent perspective, and look, I also think Drew Aller last year was going through that learning curve. We saw that he played pretty well in home games, but on the road in some of those big-time Big Ten environments, he struggled a little bit. And so I think having a full year of experience under his belt, I think that's going to be beneficial for him as well.
I also think, Dustin, that James Franklin identified the offense as a real problem. For him to let go of a coordinator before the season ended, there were issues there. Yeah. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but in his press conference, he never hesitates to take a shot at Mike Yurcich. You know, you saw how we had more explosive plays the last couple games. I also think as part of this, he named a couple guys as the interim offensive coordinators for those last couple games. He could have done that. He could have named one of them the coordinator, but the fact that he went outside to Kotelnicki, I think he will concede a lot of things to the offensive coordinator, to Andy Kotelnicki. And maybe that's me just being a Penn State fan, keeping my fingers crossed for that.
No, I think that's completely fair. And look, it's as we just discussed, it's not like they have to make wholesale changes or sweeping changes. They've been right there. And they've done some. It seems like every year they're almost a lock to get to 10 wins. Like that's in college football, that's you have a really good problem if you're trying to figure out how to only beat two opponents every single year. But when you are at that level, you got to raise the bar a little bit. So, again, I just want to see, I would like to see some more wrinkles. I think you could take maybe some more shots down the field this season. Maybe they think they can do that. Maybe they think Drew Aller has the arm talent and they've got the receivers to be able to do that. Maybe they were hesitant because they didn't feel like they could. They had the talent or the scheme to be able to do that the past couple seasons. I don't know, but I think that if he does relinquish some of those responsibilities then and allows Andy Kotelnicki to do his thing offensively, then I do think that Penn State's in a much better situation than they were last season. And again, a 10-win team, so much better, you know, is relative.
Well, also, I don't know if you've watched any highlights from Andy Kotelnicki's time at Kansas. There's some creativity there, so yeah. I hope that we see it. And I'll give you one last note. You have to follow all the teams, and it's more teams this year in the Big Ten, but look out for Trey Wallace if he stays healthy as a receiver, Dustin. All right, I teased this question at the end of the first segment, and I've been curious. I've looked around. I can't find the answer anywhere, and I think this could very well come up. Is a tiebreaker to get into the conference championship game. And I think the Southeast Conference could really deal with this also. Multiple teams with the same record. They may not have played head-to-head. How's the tiebreaker going to work?
I have no idea. And that's a problem. It feels like National Treasure when they're trying to find like the the hidden message on the back of the Declaration of Independence or whatever it was. But I don't know what the answer is. I've seen, and you know what's funny, Jim, and this maybe is a sign that I spend too much time on social media and X and all that stuff, but I've seen scenarios where there could be a 5-team tie at 7-2 in the conference standings with 5 teams beating up on each other. And how does that get sorted out? As a fan of chaos, I would love to see that. And I know I've pointed out like the scenario in which that will not happen, but there are scenarios in which there could potentially be 3 12-0 teams at the end of the season. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not going to happen, but the Big Ten just has no plan for anything at this time, which I'm a big fan of Tony Petitti. I think he's done a lot of wonderful things for the Big Ten. I think he's a really good commissioner, but this has a little bit of that Kevin Warren feel, and we need to get away from that. So as soon as we can just figure out some sort of tiebreaker, that would be great. Just so we know.
Oh boy, some hate on Kevin Warren also. You are really endearing yourself to me and our audience. Well, the thing with the playing it out, though, I think ultimately they're probably going to have to go by offload this to College Football Playoff Committee, use their rankings to determine the tiebreaker. But yeah, you mentioned how, you know, theoretically it's possible for, you know, like 3 teams to be undefeated, but you really have to stretch to find a way to do that. I think, Dustin, Ohio State and Oregon are the very best teams in the league. I think Penn State has the chance. You know, they could lose to Ohio State, win every other game, be a one-loss team, and be in that tiebreaker discussion. But if you go to the Southeast Conference, I did a little exercise, and this was, you know, a month or two ago, so I'm not sure whose rankings I was using, but I was using either ESPN's or somebody's projected rankings. And I played out the season with you lose to the teams that are higher ranked than you, okay? So there's no bogus, well, if, you know, Northwestern upsets Ohio State,
right?
You know, there's none of that. Every game is the higher ranked team wins. I came up with 7 teams, 7 of them, with 2 losses or fewer. And I think like 4 or 5 of them had 1 loss or fewer.
Wow.
It's really crazy, and it's even more so in the Southeast Conference because they play only 8 conference games.
Right.
So there's fewer chances for those losses to come up. So I do think that's going to get ugly, but I think the even uglier thing that could come up is, you know, let's play this out a bit where, you know, you have the second place and third place team tied, you know, you use a tiebreaker, and that team then loses the playoff game. Does the number 3 team in the conference jump the number 2 team for the College Football Playoffs, Dustin? Does that championship game have any meaning for the playoff committee if you lose?
I mean, I would think it would, and it probably depends. So in your scenario, let's say that it's Ohio State and Oregon, and then Penn State's on the outside looking in. And then let's say Ohio State wins that game 28-24. Probably still Oregon's going to get in. And then depending on how the rest of the field plays out, I think Penn State, you know, is probably going to make a case to get in to the playoff as well. But if Ohio State wins that game 57-10, is that enough to say, you know what? You had your chance, Oregon. You blew it. We're going to put Penn State in. And then, oh, let's look at this fourth team in the Big Ten that maybe had, you know, the same record as Oregon and Penn State, or however the math works out. Do they deserve a shot because they didn't lose a game by 40 points this season? So it's really interesting. I think it depends on how that final game is played out, because you remember there was basically what got Ohio State in the very first season when they went on to win the national championship was the fact that they beat Wisconsin 59-0. Right.
Yes.
So
that's right.
I think that does carry a little bit of weight. I don't think we're going to have that type of scenario. But again, if you're on the cusp and it's between 2 losses and 3 or 3 losses and 4, I don't know. It could be enough to get that third place team in. And then it's like, well, then why did we even play in the Big Ten championship game?
Well, I think the issue, and we're here to talk about the Big Ten, but I think the bigger question is going to come. Let's picture the ACC, Clemson and Florida State, each with one loss. Florida State loses a second game in the ACC championship game. Do you put a two-loss, say, LSU in the Southeast from the Southeast Conference in the playoffs ahead of a two-loss Florida State who lost the conference championship game?
Oh, I think we know the answer to that. The College World Playoff is always going to give preferential treatment to the SEC. There's no debate on that.
But that my prediction is it's somebody's going to lose a conference championship game, and it's either going to very much affect their seeding, or it's going to keep them from making the playoffs, and we'll have complete chaos because of that. The first thing being, will conferences say, as much money as we make in the conference championship games, is it worth sacrificing a playoff spot by playing that conference championship game? And it might be the Big 12 and the ACC who have that debate, because I think they're the conferences where their conference champion is the most vulnerable to lose a playoff spot. All right. I didn't mean to get off on that tangent, Dustin. I promise we'll get back to the Big Ten when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante with our guest, Sports Illustrated Big Ten football writer, Dustin Schutte. Dustin, I got off tangent, got into the college football playoffs, which is one of my favorite topics. Let's get back to the Big Ten itself. And here's my question for you. Let's talk Big Ten quarterbacks. And I put in every one of the top eight teams in the Big Ten that I identify. It seems like everybody's got a question of some type at quarterback. I don't know where you want to go. We talked a little bit already, Dylan Gabriel and Will Howard at the top, but take your pick. Cade McNamara at Iowa, apparently he's struggling. An Iowa quarterback struggling. Never heard that story before. How about Dylan Riola at Nebraska, the true freshman? He's got a chance to play. Does Michigan even have a quarterback? Miller Moss, USC, he's got one game under his belt. How about Tyler Van Dyke up at Wisconsin?
Yep.
There are like quarterback questions everywhere. Take your pick. Who do you want to talk about?
Well, I think I will start with the really concerning thing, and then I'll go to the two quarterbacks that you didn't even mention that I think could be really interesting this season. The situation at Iowa doesn't look good. I don't know if people have seen, but apparently Iowa ran a scrimmage and Cade McNamara completed 7 of like 21 passes for 20 yards, interception, like did not look good. And this is a kid coming off injury who is in I know that Iowa changed their offensive coordinator and hired Tim Lester, but you can't make a sweeping change, especially without utilizing the transfer portal, and Iowa really doesn't, which I don't have a problem with, but you're not going to make a sweeping change to your offense. So they did bring in Brendan Sullivan from Northwestern. they might have a quarterback controversy, but if Cade McNamara is that bad right now, Jim, I don't know how it could get worse, but it might get worse.
Well, I saw an article about that too, where they were saying how the backup outplayed him. You mentioned McNamara's stats. I think the quote unquote outplaying, I think he was like 10 for 24 for, you know, less than 100 yards. That was considered outplaying the starter.
Yeah. It's not been good no matter what. I don't know. Unfortunately, Kirk Ferentz has been a really good coach in the Big Ten for a long time. He's been at Iowa for, you know, over 20 years for a reason. He's gotten him to the Big Ten championship game a few times. He's gotten him to some really good bowl games, had some really big seasons. But he did a disservice by keeping Brian Ferentz as long as he did, because there's no recovering from it to me. If they can get up to the top 80 offenses, that's a huge accomplishment, and they might be in the conversation for Big Ten championship because of that schedule, not necessarily because they're more talented. But I don't know. Even with a light schedule and as good as that defense and their special teams has been, if their offense is really going to be this bad, people are just going to load up the box and dare them to throw.
Well, it's funny. We were just talking on another episode about Iowa, and I brought up the 21 Iowa team that was ranked third, and they played Penn State at home. Penn State was taking it to them till Sean Clifford got hurt. The game turned around completely. There was Iowa just, you know, at the top of the football world, and they end up losing to unranked Purdue and unranked Wisconsin the next 2 weeks. Okay. Yep. They're still Iowa. Oh, and by the way, they somehow still managed to win the West Division of the Big Ten. And then, in a surprise, got slaughtered in the Big Ten championship game. So yep. I'm with you. I think it's craziness at Iowa and could even get worse with their quarterback. You mentioned there's a couple quarterbacks I didn't even mention. Who are you talking about?
Yeah. So if you're reading between the tea leaves here, it sounds like Max Brosmeret. Minnesota has done some really good things. Sounds like he's got a cannon. I think people, and we're now like what, 5-6 seasons removed from this, a lot of people always think we're going to get that Minnesota team that we got in 2019 that had Tanner Morgan and Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson, Chris Ottman Bell. I just don't think that team is going to exist under PJ Fleck. He still wants to run the football. They're never going to be that type of dynamic passing team again. But I think that if they get to a point where they have somebody that they're confident with, they haven't had a quarterback that can really stretch the field. And so I think if they have that, and from what you're reading out of camp, he has the ability to do that. Whether or not they have the wide receivers and the offensive line to protect, I'm not sure. But I think that he's a guy that could be that missing piece. And again, I'm not talking about competing for a Big Ten title here. I'm talking about getting to 8, maybe 9 wins on the season, and after a 6-7 campaign last year, only getting to a bowl game because of their APR. I think that was a big move this offseason. And then Ethan Calliope-Manis, who was Minnesota's previous quarterback, going to Rutgers. And look, I don't think that that's a Will Howard, Dylan Gabriel type transfer situation, but with the way that Rutgers is returning 4 offensive linemen, the Big Ten's leading rusher and Kyle Manungai. They have a really good defense. I think 9 defensive starters are returning for that team. He's probably the best quarterback that they've had since Greg Schiano has returned. So can he do enough and get the ball to the playmakers to where Rutgers is a more formidable opponent? Because again, like Iowa, they miss Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. They have a really favorable schedule. So I think those 2 quarterback moves this offseason, I think were really big for both of those programs and a chance to maybe chase 8-9, maybe even get in that 10-win category.
What's interesting is you said that I didn't mention him. I actually, and I don't know, I'm showing it to you, I actually had him in my notes, okay? I just didn't want to have to pronounce his last name.
That's fair. That's fair.
I'm glad you took that over. But it's also an example. An advocate of Rutgers, I think it's the right coach at the right time for the right team. And they play tough. That's the way he coaches. That's the kind of player they're able to get. They're not going to be able to compete with Ohio State and Penn State for those top recruits. But if there's anything, any time, any year that can fall into place for them is this season. As you mentioned, the top four teams in the conference, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, they don't play any of those four. If you're a Rutgers fan, you look at your schedule, there's not a game in there that you say, we can't win that game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're doing backflips. I'm sure Greg Schiano had to have like go to a chiropractor after he saw that schedule, because you immediately go out of the Big Ten East. And there are some, there are going to be some tough games, but this is, if you want to make a statement and get a chance to improve your recruiting and show kids in the transfer portal that, hey, we can win at Rutgers, this is going to be the year to do it, because this is probably not going to happen again. Maybe it might happen at some point down the road, but it's not going to be for a very long time that you had such a favorable schedule. So you, they have to take advantage, and they can't take advantage by going 6-6. This has to be an 8 or 9 win team, in my opinion.
Yes, and that opportunity is there for them. It will be interesting to see how that plays out. You mentioned you exercised your Michigan hate, which we loved, but does Michigan have their quarterback?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what the situation is there. I don't know how to say this. It feels like it's been very quiet out of Michigan, but at the same time, very loud. But all you're hearing about is the Harbaugh stuff, the cheating stuff, all the stuff that Sharon Moore can control. There hasn't been a lot surfacing out of there. So I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback, but I can tell you this much. It's going to be a drop off from what they had with JJ McCarthy. And that's another reason why I just think that Michigan this season is at number 9 is overrated.
I'm going to lump two teams together for you, because I keep doing this with the coaches in their second year at both Nebraska and Wisconsin, and different at quarterback. Wisconsin brings in Tyler Van Dyke, I guess, from Miami, and Nebraska brings in the Dylan Riola as the true freshman quarterback. And I heard an interview with Matt Rhule, who says he's going to play some. He didn't give him the starting nod, but he said he's definitely going to play. Compare those two programs for me and the direction they're going.
Well, I think they're both on an upward trajectory. I think when you look at, I think that, and they're both going to be formidable in the Big Ten for probably a while. I think Luke Fickell proved he was a really good coach at Cincinnati and can do it on that type of level. I don't know about this year, because again, you look week three, they play Alabama, they host Alabama, then they travel to USC. So those two games, we're going to find out a lot about Wisconsin, you know, basically in that first month of the season. On the other side, if Nebraska is rolling in Rayola, if he's going to be their guy, which I think he's probably going to be, they do have the benefit of playing a lighter schedule and getting him adjusted and acclimated to college football. They have UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa the first 3 weeks, then the next couple games, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana. It's not far-fetched to think that Nebraska would be 7-0 heading into the back portion of their schedule. And I'm not saying they're going to be, make that clear. I'm just saying they got a really good shot. And I just think that they are set up better for success. I think their defense is really good. It's again, much like we've seen the last couple seasons, is the offense going to make enough plays to where they can win some of those close games that they've lost the last couple years? Wisconsin, I think, is just more of a work in progress, and the fact that they've got a tougher schedule. I think they're still going to be a good football team. I just don't know if they're ready to take on that type of schedule this year.
Well, you mentioned that Rutgers playing Nebraska. That could be a real interesting game there, yeah, and tell you which program it is going where. The other one I mentioned, Miller Moss at USC. Did you see enough in their bowl game last year to say, yep, he's the guy?
It's no, because it's so hard to tell with opt-outs and what changes are coming, all that stuff. I can't put too much into a bowl game performance. I can tell you that I do put faith in Lincoln Riley and his ability to develop a quarterback, right? Like we've seen it. We saw it at Oklahoma. Caleb Williams was sensational at USC. So it's kind of like it's more like the Ryan Day thing, where I don't necessarily think that the bowl game, but I just have faith that Lincoln Riley will have that offense up and running, even though it's going to be a different conference, different quarterback. I think that their offense is going to be just fine under Miller Moss. I don't think he's not going to be Caleb Williams, but he's quality.
All right, that's it for quarter three. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dustin how many Big Ten teams are going to make the playoffs when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante, along with our guest, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, before we go on, tell our audience where they can find all of your stuff.
Yeah, so I am at Sports Illustrated, and I do cover the Big Ten, but I also, my main websites are Indiana and Purdue, so si.com/college/Indiana or si.com/college/Purdue is where you can find most of my work these days.
Very good, and some really great stuff coming from Dustin. I know that. I read him all the time. Dustin, I teased it before we started with how many playoff teams do you think we're going to see from the Big Ten?
I think three. And I know that Matt Rhule at Big Ten Media Day said he thought that there could be four teams in there. That could be a possibility depending on how some of these other teams perform. But I think where we're going to see Ohio State and Oregon, I think, as we talked about earlier with what they have coming back and the coaching staffs that they have in place, I think that those two teams are going to be in Indianapolis, and I think both of them are going to earn a trip to the college football playoff. And I do think Penn State is going to get there too. I just think that they have the talent. This looks like a team to me that is going to win 10 games again. It's just a matter of, can they get over the hump? Can they finally beat Ohio State like they did in 2010? They have a few tough games on the schedule outside of that, but you get UCLA at home, you get Washington in a whiteout game, and obviously those teams are going through some massive changes. You have to go. I think the biggest question for me is that three-game stretch where they have USC on the road, then they go to Wisconsin, then you host Penn State. Can you go 2-1 in there? If you go 2-1 in there, I think you are probably headed to the college football playoff. That's my thought. I think three teams. I don't think there's a fourth. Again, could Iowa be there because of the schedule? Maybe, but I just don't have faith in their offense being that bad, that much improved. I don't know who that fourth team would be. I guess maybe USC. Maybe USC, if their defense is improved from the past couple seasons under Lincoln Riley, that those would be the only two outside options to get four teams in my opinion.
Well, I'm looking at, you know, just doing the numbers, the Big 12 has to get a team in, the ACC has to get a team in, the Group of Five has to get a team in. That's three teams right there. If you want to add in Notre Dame also, I don't want to, but let's say they do. That's four teams. That's plus three from the Big Ten. That still leaves five openings available. Do you see five teams from the Southeast Conference, or do you see a second team from either the ACC or Big 12?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've seen a lot of people already put five teams from the SEC in there. I don't want that to happen. I don't know. Maybe four, and then you have some other team from another conference from the ACC or the Big 12 sneaks in. That's a tough question. I think that I'm going to say the SEC gets four and another conference gets two. I'll put it I don't know who that's going to be, but five is a lot for one conference. Wouldn't surprise me, but I think the SEC is going to be capped at four.
I think that the committee will want to keep them capped at four. The problem is, you know, that what I set up there with the numbers, and my thinking is, might the Big 12 and or ACC hurt themselves with their conference championship game? That's where I think they might run into trouble getting their second team in.
Yeah, that could very well be a problem. And the SEC is loaded. I mean, maybe it could be a situation where maybe the Big Ten does get four teams. Maybe it's Big Ten, SEC each get four, and then everything else plays out the way you just laid out for us. I don't know. I look at things from a talent perspective more than like a schedule and what could happen. And from a talent perspective, I think that the Big Ten has three teams talented enough, as, at least as I look at it right now, to get to the playoff. The SEC probably has more. And I think, to your point, Jim, what the fact that they play eight conference games, that allows them, they're going to have less in-conference losses. And almost every team in the SEC then loads up on an FCS opponent the week before Thanksgiving. So they can pile up the wins, and that may be the difference. And I've hated that. I wish that there would be some sort of commission or college football overlord or commissioner or something to even out the conference schedules. Even though you're not going to have an even set of teams and talent level, you could at least have an even number of games to give the committee like a straight line formula to how to get into the playoff, but not going to happen. So SEC could get five. I would hope more of Big Ten, four and four. I just don't know who that fourth team would be.
I agree with you. And the issue with the Southeast Conference only playing eight conference games really is an issue. As I pointed out early, you know, I put together what I think is a realistic scenario where you have like seven teams in the Southeast Conference with two losses or fewer. And it becomes, you know, that Southeast Conference ego thing where, hey, if you're a two-loss Southeast Conference school, how could you not make the playoffs over a two-loss Big 12 team or a two-loss ACC team? But if that second loss comes from a championship game, how does that work? And I said this is the first year that I think the playoff committee actually has work to do. And it's going to be controversial one way or another.
Well, it always has been. And I think what would be concerning to me, and I don't know the math on this and I don't know the years by years, but there were at least two or three years kind of bunched together where the SEC at the end of the season had the highest ranked 0-loss, 1-loss, 2-loss, and 3-loss teams.
Yes.
And I don't know how that formula played out, but there was always basically if the records were the same, the tie went to the SEC. And so I don't know if that's going to be a similar situation this year or not, because the Big Ten is deeper with 18 teams than the SEC with 16. And I think there's probably more talented teams in the Big Ten this year. Now, I don't know. I don't cover the SEC. I'm not as in tune with what they're doing down there, but I know they've got Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU is probably going to be solid. They've got some good teams for sure, but that's where I would be concerned, because in the past, same record, similar strength of schedule, tie has gone to the SEC.
And I think the SEC, an SEC fan will say it's legitimate and should be that way. I could make that argument, but I think this year what's different is if you go through the SEC schedule team by team, there's such a difference. I mean, all you got to do is look at the two new teams, Texas and Oklahoma, and see the difference in those two schedules. It's incredible. So I think for the first time, instead of just saying, my take on the playoff committee until this year was always, it's real easy. You're undefeated, you're in. If you lose two games, you're out. And then we just have the tiebreaker with the one-loss teams. Real simple. SEC team first, Big Ten team next, then one of the other conferences. That's it. I just did the playoff committee thing in 30 seconds. This year, I think they're going to actually legitimately have a debate, because a two-loss Big Ten team and a two-loss Southeast Conference schedule, you're going to have to look at their schedules. A two-loss Iowa in the Big Ten is not going to be a very impressive team because of that schedule. But if Oklahoma has two losses with that schedule, Oklahoma head and shoulders above Iowa is my take.
No, I would completely agree. And I think that this year, probably more so than any, will be, and probably moving forward, strength of schedule is going to be really important. And I don't know what, but Texas, for example, playing Michigan in the non-conference, that's huge for them. And we'll just stick with Iowa. The fact that they play West, I don't even know who they play. Illinois State, Iowa State, and I don't know who the third team is. It's a group of five team. Iowa State's not that. I mean, I know it's another Power Five team, but I think you're right. I think scheduling is going to be critically important to some of those teams when it comes to breaking a tie.
And Iowa, you know, we'll call it a loss to Ohio State. After that, you know, where is there going to be their signature win? That's going to be the problem that Iowa's going to run into, is my take on it. All right, last question. Who's going to be the surprise team in the Big Ten? Who's the team that you look at and say, you know what, everybody's underrating them?
Yeah, I think the two teams that stand out most, I'm sorry, I'm cheating your game here, but I think the two teams to me that stand out are, I think Nebraska is going to be a lot better. And I think that Rutgers is going to be pushed for 9 wins. I think when you look at what they have returning, I think when you look at the schedule, the fact that Greg Schiano's, you know, been there a while and kind of instilled that culture, I think Rutgers and Nebraska are going to be the two teams that at the end of the season, I don't know that they'll be ranked, but I think they're going to be better than what a lot of people think they'll be.
I do think that's the case. And again, with Rutgers, so much of it is going to be that schedule. But it still also reminds me of, after you get past, you know, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, maybe USC, maybe Michigan, who knows? Once you get beyond those teams, it looks like the Big Ten West again, you know, who among, you know, Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin, maybe throw Rutgers in there now. How do you pick among them?
Yeah, I don't know. And another, I think Indiana, what are they going to, brand new coaching staff, Kurt Cignetti has a ton of confidence. That dude is, he's confident that Indiana's not going to win 10 games, but could they get 5 or 6? Maybe. Like that could be another surprise team. There's not a lot of there's always intrigue at the top because of the college football playoff and the Big Ten championship game. But to me, it's as you mentioned, it's almost 6 through maybe 16 or 17 that's really going to be interesting this season.
And I think they'll just beat each other up and all end up, you know, with either 4-5 or 5-4 within the conference. All right, Dustin, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you all for listening, and make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.